Welcome to the Mid-Atlantic Championship Podcast, the podcast that travels back into time to review classic episodes of Jim Crockett Promotions Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling as it appears on the NBC Universal streaming service Peacock, as well as internationally on the WWE Network. My name is Mike Sempervivi, and before we begin today's voyage, I'd just like to note we have social media on several platforms. Our Twitter is the most active, but we have a Facebook page and more. Just search at Mid-Atlantic Pod and look for the logo. And if you want to follow along with us but don't have access to Peacock or the network, you can still do so by heading over to the mighty MidAtlanticGateway.com and checking out David Taub's reviews of these classic shows. We'd also appreciate you heading over to YouTube.com/MidAtlanticPod, where you can find full podcasts, truncated versions of classic episodes, plus special audio and video clips exclusive to our page, and often with the great assistance of the mighty Mid-Atlantic Gateway website. Go to YouTube.com/MidAtlanticPod and please subscribe, watch, and like the videos. It would be doing us a great service. Now, with all that out of the way, today, in episode number 45, we take a look at the television that was taped on Wednesday, December 1st, 1982, at the WPCQ Studios, Channel 36, in Charlotte, North Carolina, and began airing in local markets beginning that weekend of Saturday, December 4th. I'd like to bring in my co-host right now, Roman Gomez. Roman, how are you?
I am doing good, Mike. I'm excited to talk about this Mid-Atlantic, the ongoings of things going on, especially after last week's episode. Wow, that was amazing, and looking forward to talking about this week.
And this week we got a show that is largely angle and promo driven, so we do open the episode at the podium and not in the ring, which is the way that it had been for the past few episodes, a match that's been joined in progress, which goes about 30 seconds. Instead, today, Bob Cottle welcomes us and introduces us to the new Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Champion, Jack Briscoe. And you may remember from the last episode of the podcast, as I was running down the results from around the area, that Briscoe knocked off Paul Jones in a no DQ match at the Charlotte Coliseum on November 28th. It was Jones's third and final reign as champion, lasted 28 days, and it was the last championship number one would hold in his fabled career. For Briscoe, it would be his sixth Mid-Atlantic championship reign, and it would also be his last major singles championship as well. But we won't jump the gun on his demise quite yet. Instead, let's take a listen to what the new champion had to say.
Among many other great wrestling stars, but right now I want you to meet the new Mid-Atlantic champ right here, Jack Briscoe. Jack?
Well, thank you very much, Bob, and it's certainly an honor to be the Mid-Atlantic champion again, chasing Paul Jones around the country trying to get this belt back from him, and I finally accomplished it, and I'm just real happy. And I just want all the wrestlers to know out there, I'll wrestle anybody, I have an open contract, and right here it is for anyone to come and get it.
Jack, and I tell you, I know this. I know the fans are going to be pleased and they're happy that Jack Briscoe is Mid-Atlantic champ again.
Well, thank you, Bob. I certainly worked very hard for it, and I want to thank all the people for sticking behind me. And like I said, I got an open contract, and it's up for grabs.
And good luck to you, Jack Briscoe. There he is, fans, the new Mid-Atlantic champ. By the way,
Bob then mentions they hope to have world champion Ric Flair in studio next week to talk about he and Greg Valentine's actions last week against Roddy Piper when they rubbed his face into the studio floor. Cottle held up a picture of the damaged Piper to show the fans at home the after effects of that beating before welcoming in the new Mid-Atlantic television champion, Bad Bad Leroy Brown, showing off his brand new shiny championship belt.
And right now, here's another big man moving in, Leroy Brown.
Hey, how you doing today? Why you not didn't welcome me in the beginning of this show, the new TV champion? Well, let me tell you something. I want you to know where that Briscoe at. I want his belt, too. You know one thing about the bad man from Chicago? You know I'm going to retire this belt. Because there's no way nobody in this territory could beat the bad man 1, 2, 3 in the middle of the ring. And I got, I'm serving notice right here. Hey, just close your mouth.
I'm going to say to you, there is one man I think can, one man that formerly held that belt.
Who's not the boogie woogie man? He's a music man. He don't stand a chance against the bad man from Chicago. There's one thing I want to say, and that is this. From here in, you're going to see the real bad man because he's had enough. I've had enough, and everybody had enough. And from here on in, it's every man for himself.
And there you heard from Leroy Brown and from Bob Cottle, who mentioned that the Boogie Woogie Man, Jimmy Valiant, may like to get his hands on that TV title once again. Boogie Woogie Man's been feuding with Joe LeDuc over it, till LeDuc was stripped of the title for putting hands on NWA official Sandy Scott. From there, we go to break, and when we come back, it's the NWA World Tag Team Champions who have now joined Bob at the desk to talk about the damage that they had inflicted on Roddy Piper, and more notably to Steamboat's partner Jay Youngblood. Once again, the footage from November 12th in Charlotte is shown, with Slaughter continuing to make inflammatory comments. But before we go to Slaughter and Cronoodle, Roman, again, mentioned at the beginning this was going to be a promo and angle-heavy show, and I wasn't lying to him. This is how this show started right off the bat.
Well, right from the get-go, you know, you get the excitement of a new Mid-Atlantic heavyweight champion crowning Jack Briscoe, and then also a television champion, a new television champion crowned in Leroy Brown. But I thought that was good that they showed it was bigger than an 8x10, it looked like, the picture of Piper and the damage to the face, and how they kind of zoomed in on that to just show people like how severe the beating that Piper took. I thought that was very effective.
Yeah, over the next upcoming weeks, we are going to hear some fantastic promos from Rowdy Roddy Piper. Not like his normal ones aren't amazing enough as it is, but with him being put on the concrete for real by Ric Flair and Greg Valentine, he has got a lot to get off his chest, and he's going to be doing so in fantastic fashion. And in fact, he may get a little bit of revenge on this show right here. But before we get to that, as I mentioned, Sergeant Slaughter, Don Cornoodle, your NWA World Tag Team Champions, are still crowing about what they did on November 12th in Charlotte.
Fans, right here, the World Tag Team Champions, Don Cornoodle, Sergeant Slaughter. Don?
That's exactly right. Get those cameras in here for you, looking at the greatest tag team that ever was. You have to be shining examples to be the World Tag Team Champions, and that's exactly what Sergeant Slaughter and Don Cornoodle are. And to be shining examples, once in a while, you have to make examples, just exactly like we did to Jay Youngblood and like we're going to do just here in a minute. Tell them about it, Sergeant.
Well, you know, every time I think about somebody wanting to get into the ring with Sergeant Slaughter and Don Cornoodle, it's kind of like, well, here we are. Here's what the example is. You can see right here what's going to happen. The match is not... Tell them what you did there, Don.
Well, Steamboat was over there running his mouth, and the referee said continue the match. So I just put a knee in his back, and we continued the match. Sergeant Slaughter and I took back over on...
Every time I look at Jay Youngblood here, you know, it reminds me of what we did to him. It's like every time I go by a graveyard, I think about Jay Youngblood.
Of course, all of the fans are saying, and everybody is saying, and everybody in wrestling is saying that you deliberately did this. You deliberately hurt Youngblood. You deliberately tried to put him out, to get rid of him.
That's right. Everything we do is deliberate. Exactly right, Bob Cottle. We intended to hurt Jay Youngblood. I told you people the last couple of weeks here that when he knocked me off that apron, he was going to get hurt. You know, here's a move we've been working on. We patented this, and you just watch what we do to Jay Youngblood right here.
You get in Sergeant Slaughter and Don Cornoodle's way, the World Tag Team Champion, you must pay, and here he paid.
That's a vicious move, Sergeant.
Most vicious move probably ever done in professional wrestling. I can't say what we did any better. This is the greatest move that anybody has ever tried or has ever done. And here you can see the Cobra Clutch. This is a lights out. He was still wiggling when we did that cannon off the top rope.
Shake your hand, Sergeant.
Put the Cobra Clutch on him.
Shake your hand, Sergeant.
Put him right
that Cobra Clutch on him and
hurt him. Out of the ring. You know,
trying to wrestle us.
Both of you are in there on him. You threw the referee out.
That's right.
Look at him, Bob. Look at
We're
him shaking.
Complete control. The World Tag Team Champions in complete control here. They'll probably center it here a little bit. We're going into the ring and show you just what we can do.
Another example.
All right, fans. That, of course, the World Tag Team Champion, Sergeant Slaughter, Don Cornoodle. We're going to watch them action in the ring right now. In a tag team match against Ken Hall and Gary Black.
You know what, Roman? I got to say, you know, because he has brought this up now several times, I'm pretty sure that Sergeant Bob Slaughter is really upset that he did not kill Jay Youngblood. He has talked about whistling past that graveyard several times now in relation to Jay Youngblood, which, of course, just angers the fans who believe that Youngblood is actually out injured right now. As we've noted, Youngblood and Steamboat, Dory Funk Jr., as well as some other people, were over in Japan working for Giant Baba. The Real World Tag Team Tournament, if I'm not mistaken, was going on at the time. So that's where those guys were. But once again, another really strong interview for both Slaughter and Canoodle.
Yes, and they are getting a lot of mileage out of that footage from November 12th. And even though they've shown it 3 weeks in a row, it is kind of important. You don't want it to be out of sight, out of mind. You know, like you mentioned, Youngblood is not in the area. He is in the All Japan Tag Team Tournament. So for them to keep kind of refreshing people's memory of what happened over and over is just going to put a little more heat to the fire for when Youngblood does make his eventual return.
And as you heard Slaughter mention, they continue to censor the video where he picks up Jay Youngblood in the Cobra Clutch. Canoodle lifts up his legs and they slam him down to the mat. It's amazing they do not show that. And they're still putting that moment over that most people, everybody that was not in Charlotte, you know, nobody saw what happened there. They have no clue on what took place. So they don't know what that move is. They have no idea. It's what I just mentioned. They don't. So they're just still, it's a drama that this censor, what happened, what put Jay Youngblood out for so long, what left him prone on the mat where Ricky Steamboat and Tommy Young had to drag him over to the edge of the ring and Steamboat had to pick him up like a baby in his arms and carry him back to the locker room and be out of commission. So all of that drama still building right now. And then Slaughter and Canoodle would get in the ring after they got done talking against Ken Hall and Gary Black. The referee for the day is Tommy Young. Pure one-sided domination from Slaughter and Canoodle. The end came when Canoodle delivered a big thump power slam to Hall and tagged in Slaughter. Canoodle lifted Hall up. And Slaughter came crashing down with the Slaughter Cannon clothesline to take the victory in only 2 minutes and 46 seconds. After the match, the champions continued to beat down Hall until Tommy Young literally dove in to save the downed opponent. So a dominant performance for the NWA World Tag Team Champions who said what they were going to do and then went out and did it.
Sarge and Canoodle were very aggressive in this match. Their kicks were delivered very stiff and cool finish. Canoodle held Hall up in the air and Slaughter came off the top rope with the Slaughter Cannon, which is a clothesline for those of you that don't know. And after the match, Slaughter ended up putting Hall in the Cobra Clutch until referee Tommy Young had to separate it. But Slaughter and Canoodle look really good here, very aggressive, and they're running roughshod over people right now.
If they can do that to Youngblood and Steamboat, imagine what they can do to everybody else, including all that young talent and that preliminary talent that's trying to make their way, like Gary Black, beaten down at the hands of the NWA World Tag Team Champions. And speaking of beatdowns, we go to break, and then when we come back, United States Heavyweight Champion Greg the Hammer Valentine is standing in the ring. His opponent today? The tall, well-built Ricky Rudd. No, not the South Norfolk native who finished second in points during 1991's Winston Cup season, but the future ravishing Rick Rude, who was just cutting his teeth in the wrestling business, and lots of suplexes and clubbing forearms by Valentine here. Rude sold okay, but you can see how ridiculously inexperienced he is. Valentine used the spinning toe hold a few times before he went to apply the figure four leg lock, and as he did, he was paid a visit by Roddy Piper.
Valentine, and it looks now like he's trying to get him into the figure four. And here comes into the ring Roddy Piper. Valentine had that figure four on Rudd. He gave him a couple of spinning toe holds. Valentine last week with, of course, the champion Ric Flair came in to work over Roddy Piper, and here's Piper charging now after and trying to get out of the studio now after Greg Valentine. When Valentine got that figure four on Rudd, very quickly, Roddy Piper came bursting into the studio, into the ring, went right after Valentine.
Rudd is disqualified. Valentine takes the victory before fleeing, and Piper just missed a chance to get some revenge as the show went to break, Roman. And it looks like that wherever Valentine is going to be, Roddy Piper won't be too far behind him, trying to cause some chaos and get a little bit of a pound of flesh.
No doubt about it. And in this contest, Rudd got absolutely no offense in. It was all Valentine, you know, until Piper came out and ruined the party. And it's just kind of ironic that you know, years later, Piper and Rude would have a big feud, you know, in the WWF. But yeah, it's kind of fun to see Rick Rude in the early genesis of his career, you know, not really knowing how to sell, not having his persona and everything. But it's what makes doing these podcasts fun. It's fun to see guys in their early infancy of their wrestling career.
Yeah, I mentioned, you know, Rude does a pretty good job selling. He's facing Greg Valentine, so you really don't have a choice. You know what I mean? It's not hard to sell a clubbing forearm across your back at full force, which drops you to your knees. You know, it's a pretty easy one. So Valentine, very easy to work with that way. So after that, we go to break. When we come back, Bob Caudle is talking to Bob Orton Jr. and Sweet Brown Sugar, who we're seeing for the first time on Mid-Atlantic TV. Sugar debuted 2 weeks ago during the episode that isn't available on the WWE Network or Peacock. This is the interview that is in lieu of being able to see any local spots. Orton reveled in Piper punching Valentine in the face and promised there would be more to come from Piper's Palace to Valentine and the rest of the House of Humperdinck. Sugar talked about his loss to Leroy Brown on Thanksgiving and said that one day the television title would be his. Sugar and Leroy Brown had actually tangled before, as Brown took the Southern title off of him back in 1979. Sweet Brown Sugar is also known as Skip Young, and he started his career in Florida before making stops in Portland and Tulsa on the way to his first stint in Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling during 1978 and 1979, where he would occasionally team with Jay Youngblood and Pedro Morales. Young then headed back down to Florida and won the Southern title a few times. He also toured for New Japan Pro Wrestling in 1980 alongside fellow Floridians Steve Kern and Rocky Johnson. Young went on to really raise his star in Dallas before going back to Florida and picking up where he left off. During that stint, he was able to tour with All Japan Pro Wrestling before ending up back in Jim Crockett Promotions for this run. And he was in our next match against the future Road Warrior Animal, Joe Loren. Unlike Rick Rude, it was a lot more obvious of what Loren's potential could be, especially for a guy who didn't have an amateur background. He did take a great horrible bump off an atomic drop, though, and the match went 3 minutes and 32 seconds, although it did feel like it went a lot longer, though there was some good work put in by Sugar. The finish came when Loren caught Sugar on what looked like it was supposed to be, Roman, a flying head scissors, but it turned into a body press attempt instead, and then Sweet Brown Sugar rolled him up for the pin. So a little bit wonky there due to Joe Loren's inexperience, but Sweet Brown Sugar I thought looked fantastic.
Yeah, the finish did come off a little weird. Something looked a little off on that. And it's kind of weird to see Road Warrior Animal with hair. He had hair and a beard. And those of you, if you can picture maybe like a Dr. Death Steve Williams type, you know, he kind of looks something like that a little bit. But yeah, Sweet Brown Sugar hit him with the drop kick and then rolled him up for the victory.
We then have a fade into the introductions for our next match, Bob Orton Jr. against Rick Connors. Caudle puts Orton's recent successes over, as well as his teaming with Jimmy Valiant, Abdul the Butcher, and Roddy Piper in Piper's Palace against the House of Humperdinck. Orton is so technically good, Roman, in every way, punches and elbows, on the ground, working a limb, throwing drop kicks, just an excellent worker who really wrestled a lot bigger than his 6'1" frame, or however tall he actually was. And this match didn't go on long, but there was something notable as Orton used his back suplex and then a power slam and could have gotten the pin, but he pulled up, scratching his head like a heel would do. He then picked Connors up, took him over to the corner, and delivered the superplex into a pin at 3 minutes and 41 seconds. Bob Orton takes the victory, and I thought, in a very, very cool fashion, setting up the superplex in the way that he did.
Yeah, Orton has always been a great tactician, and the crowd was definitely behind him. And he hit that running power slam, and like you said, he could have went for the pin and got the 3, but he decided not to. And that's not something a babyface does, unless he's in a feud with somebody, you know. But this was Rick Connors, an enhancement guy, so that was kind of a heelish type move that Orton did. And then he goes up for the superplex, and great move, but only in wrestling can you have two guys fall from the same height and one of them get hurt. Nonetheless, a great move, the superplex.
We then go to a break, and when we come back, Mike Rotundo is standing alongside Bob Cottle. Rotundo is there to issue a challenge to Leroy Brown, who he's been trying to get a win against for the past several weeks. Brown is in the ring alongside Sir Oliver Humperdinck, all ready to face Mike Davis, who we haven't seen on TV in a while. And here's what Mike Rotundo had to say.
Leroy Brown and Sir Oliver Humperdinck in the ring, but right here, Mike Rotundo, Mike.
You know, I'm here for one reason and one reason only, Bob. To challenge that man to a match. I want a match with him. I don't care where it is, if it's on TV, any place. I want a match with him. Some people think I'm nuts for wanting that.
I mean, you keep coming back, Mike. More and more.
I've come to adversity in my sports career before, Bob, and I've always come back, and I've come back on top. And like I said before, I'm going to keep on going until I beat that man because he's hurt me. And if I run from him, I'll just have to keep on running, and I'm not about to do that.
So, Mike, again, you're challenging Leroy Brown.
He's got a belt now. I want that TV belt, and I want Leroy Brown.
Fans, that's the challenge right here from Mike Rotundo in the ring. Bad, bad Leroy Brown, Mike Davis, and of course up there with Leroy Brown in that championship belt, Sir Oliver Humperdinck.
So there you heard from Mike Rotundo challenging Leroy Brown, and not surprisingly, Brown protests Rotundo joining Cottle out there for the match, and as we've heard from Rotundo's promos, so do I, but that notwithstanding, Rotundo says he's not going anywhere until Brown agrees to the match. The crowd was really chanting for Rotundo, so as much as we make fun of his interviews, you know, this kid has gotten over to that crowd. And the babyface stood pat for what felt like 10 minutes. It was actually only about two until finally Humperdinck and Brown agreed to Rotundo and having a match for the TV title down the line. Rotundo finally left. The match got started. And as per the, is always the case with the TV title, for the first 10 minutes of the match, the title is on the line, but it only went 3 minutes and 20 seconds. Brown won with a big elbow smash after Davis only got in a couple of moments of offense, Roman, but a one-sided victory for our new Mid-Atlantic Television Champion and Mike Rotundo, who's been trying to get a victory over Leroy Brown week after week after week, now has a little bit more inspiration now that Leroy is wearing that TV title.
Yeah, and I'm glad you mentioned that it felt like 10 minutes because it almost seemed like two little kids, you know, Rotundo. I'm not leaving until I get a shot. Well, I'm not giving you a shot. Well, I'm not leaving. Well, I'm not giving you a... It kind of drug it out a little bit too long for my taste, but I guess it worked. Rotundo gets his television title shot, and Leroy Brown, his size and strength was just too much for Mike Davis to handle.
We went to break again, and when we came back, we got the second in lieu of promo this time around from our main event trio of Gene Anderson, Paul Jones, Joe LeDuc, and their manager, Sir Oliver Humperdinck. The group fills a little bit of time before they get in the ring for their match against Buzzsaw, Johnny Weaver, Ron, Richie, and King Parsons. A good match, a very good 1982 7-minute main event match with everybody in there is a legitimate guy. You know, Ron Ritchie ended up being the one who took the fall, submitted at the 7-minute, 2-second mark to Paul Jones in the Indian leg lock. But, you know, he's been a guy who has battled back and forth with the Slaughters and the Valentines. King Parsons, one half of the, at one time, the Mid-Atlantic Tag Team Championships. Obviously, Johnny Weaver, a longtime legend. Same thing goes for Gene Anderson. Paul Jones and Joe LeDuc have been in the mix. So everybody in this match was a name, Roman, and really good work, really, from all six men.
Yeah, this match had lots of tags and was very well paced. It was very fast. Both teams got in their offense, and this was a fun match to watch. And, you know, at the end, Paul Jones with that Indian deathlock. My gosh, that is such an impressive move that I wish somebody would bring back today. And it's just very unique and very fun to watch.
A hell of a spot, too, early on between Ron Ritchie and Joe LeDuc, right? LeDuc had Ron Ritchie in a full Nelson. And Ritchie, you know, is trying to weasel out of it. He drops down. And, you know, throws his legs back and he's going to, you know, kick LeDuc off as LeDuc bends over to him. But instead of kicking off, LeDuc grabs his legs and Ritchie is kind of, you know, turns over And Ledoux picks him up kind of in a wheelbarrow and kind of flips him up and puts him right back into the full Nelson. And how I'm describing it didn't do it any justice whatsoever. I'll make sure that I cut it from the show and put it up on the Mid-Atlantic Twitter. You can find at Mid-Atlantic Pod. Just a sweet little spot right there. And as you mentioned, that Paul Jones Indian Deathlock, for anything you want to say about Paul Jones, that's a hell of a move that he can pull off at top tier.
Yes, and that move you talked about, I'm glad you brought that up. You described it probably better than I would have, but I'm visualizing it in my head, you know, since I've seen it. And just the crispness, the timing, everything went so smooth on that move, all for it to end up with Ledoux putting Richie back in the full Nelson. You know, it was very impressive.
I tell you, one thing about doing this show, because being my age, I grew up really, you know, from 83 on, that's when I was really into the mix. And by that time, you know, Joe Ledoux, you know, he was in different places. I would see him in the magazines, but I got to see very little of him, almost nothing of him when I was growing up. He wasn't around any territories that I had TV for. So to be able to go back and watch him and really see how good he was, how strong he was, how just a perfect pro wrestler, Joe Ledoux, who, again, looked like a zillion dollars and also wrestled like it as well, too. You could always have your Ox Bakers out there who could look like a menace, but there was there's a complete other thing to actually be a menace, and that certainly was the case with Joe Ledoux. And not only Joe Ledoux, but Big Leroy Brown came back out. Gene Anderson came over. You know, in fact, the only person out there at the end not representing the House of Humperdinck was Greg the Hammer Valentine. He was still probably running from Roddy Piper, but that's okay. Everybody else was there to offer their retorts to Piper, Jimmy Valiant, and the rest of the palace.
Fans right here, Sir Oliver Humperdinck, the House of Humperdinck. I got to tell you, I've been hearing a new phrase, something that I haven't heard before. I've been hearing about
you,
the
Piper's
Palace.
That's right. I've heard about it too, and it makes me a little bit upset because I worked a long time and very hard, I might add, to build the stable of athletes that you see around me today. And let me tell you something, Bob Orton Jr., and you, Jimmy Valiant, and yes, even you, the keeper of Piper's Palace, Roddy Piper, you will not be able to destroy this because it's bigger than all of you put together. And I would just like to take this time to speak specifically to Jimmy Valiant and show Jimmy Valiant what's going to be around the corner every time you leave your house, brother. Take a good, long, close look at this face and remember very well, brother, this is the stuff nightmares are made out of, and Jimmy Valiant, he wants you very badly.
That's right. I want you pretty bad, Jimmy Valiant. And if anybody in the world wants to get in my way, just remember this. I couldn't care less of what happens to anybody, because Jimmy Valiant, I want you, I'm going to get you. And the reason I want you and I'm going to get you is because you are a cheater. You try to buy people. Well, you're not going to buy me. I'm going to get you with my fists, with my everything I've got in me. And I've got a lot, because I've been fighting all my life since I was this young. Piper, you can talk about all kinds of stuff. Well, I'm a fighter. I'm a natural fighter. You can hurt me. Look at my face. I'm pretty ugly, but who cares? I put it all in my pocket and I laugh to the bank. So, Jimmy Valiant, for money, I can do a lot.
And I got the money and he's got the time. Now let's talk about thieves. Let's talk about vandals. Let's talk about muggers. And let's talk about Jack Briscoe stealing this man's belt. He is a thief. He is a no-count chicken thief, and there's nothing worse.
No way, Paul.
Listen, let me tell you something right now. Everybody out here knows that I'm number one. Everybody at home knows that I'm number one. And they know that Jack Briscoe, in his best day, beat me fair square like I beat him for the Mid-Atlantic belt right in the middle of the ring. I tell you, Jack, the way you cheated not only hurt me, it hurt a lot of people around this area. And I'm getting cards and letters every day, Bob. People say, we stand behind you, number one, even though you don't have a belt. But let me tell you something. I am not a complete man. I am not number one until I have a belt around my waist. whether the people want it there or not, Bob. And I'm going to tell you something right now. This man standing right behind me, whatever he says, you can go to the bank with it.
I'm promising you it'll be back around your waist before too very long, Paul Jones. While I've suffered some tragedy in the house of Humperdinck life, there is some also some joy that's filtered in, and the joy being my man, Leroy Brown, the bad man from Chicago, taking a big tournament that they had entrants from all over the country come in and try for this TV title. First of all, you took it off of one of my men. Sandy Scott, this is right at you, brother. You thought you were going to get me? Well, I had an entrant in the tournament, and he came home with all the gold. Leroy Brown. Can you imagine
don't
that?
Don't worry about it. Little Crockett Promotion, Sandy Scott.
Yeah.
Hey,
yeah.
One thing about it, they try to steal the belt from the house of Humperdinck. But when they put the money on the line, the bad man is at his best. Now, you got this kid, Mike Rotundo, talking he want this
don't
belt.
Don't overlook
Rotundo. Hey, I'm not overlooking him. But all Rotundo got to do is ask himself one question. How much money is this belt worth to the bad man? And he'll know he could never beat me on his best day because I'm in this for one thing, baby. See this green? Hey, money, that's what it's all about, baby.
Well, Roman, there we heard from the House of Humperdinck running down their accomplishments as well as running down all of their rivals, most of which are associated with Piper's Palace, Roddy Piper, Jimmy Valiant, Bob Orton Jr., and the like. Jack Briscoe, obviously, in the crosshairs of Paul Jones after Briscoe won the Mid-Atlantic Heavyweight Championship again, but not a whole lot to really belabor off of this show, I don't think. Any thoughts really on, again, what was really a heavy angle and promo-driven show to kind of move everything forward?
Yeah, we did have a new Mid-Atlantic champion in Briscoe, a new television champion, Leroy Brown. The six-man match was good, but I am looking forward to the return of Steamboat and Youngblood. And also to seeing Piper return. You know, we got that brief little glimpse or tease, you know, of him doing the run-in during the Valentine match. But once Steamboat Youngblood and Piper return, things are going to get even better.
Yeah, we're going to be missing Steamboat and Youngblood for at least another week. They won't be on next week's show. But if you are turning the channel today and had a chance to see worldwide wrestling, what you would have seen was Jack Briscoe defeat Ken Timms, Paul Jones defeat King Parsons, Mike Rotundo defeat Bill White, and Bob Orton Jr. continue his winning streak, defeating Masafuchi. We'll now take a little trip around the area to run down the results of what was taking place in your town.
Let's take time for this commercial message about the Mid-Atlantic wrestling events coming up in your area.
We begin our voyage around the tri-state area on Thursday, December 2nd, Sumter, South Carolina, at the County Exhibition Center. Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle defeated Jerry Briscoe and Sweet Brown Sugar. Also, Jimmy Valiant defeated Joe LaDuke in a New York street fight, which, by the stipulations of that match, led to Jimmy Valiant against Sir Oliver Humperdinck, who he defeated by pinfall. Also on Thursday in Fishersville, Virginia, at the Augusta Expo, Roddy Piper and Mike Rotundo faced off against Greg Valentine and Leroy Brown. The next night, December 3rd, Charleston County Hall, Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle faced off against Jimmy Valiant and Sweet Brown Sugar, while King Parsons, Jerry Briscoe, and Johnny Weaver were scheduled to face Joe LaDuke, Gene Anderson, and Private Nelson. On Saturday, December 4th, in Hampton at the Coliseum, Joe LaDuke defeated Johnny Weaver, Leroy Brown defeated Mike Rotundo, Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle defeated Jerry Briscoe and Sweet Brown Sugar, Jimmy Valiant defeated Greg Valentine, and Jack Briscoe defeated Roddy Piper by disqualification. On Sunday, December 5th, in Roanoke at the Civic Center, Leroy Brown defeated Mike Rotundo, Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle defeated the Briscoe brothers, and Roddy Piper, Jimmy Valiant, and Sweet Brown Sugar defeated Joe LaDuke, Greg Valentine, and Sir Oliver Humperdinck. The show scheduled for Sunday in Kingsport, Tennessee, the Dobbins Bennett Dome, was canceled. On Monday, December 6th, in Greenville, South Carolina, at the Memorial Auditorium, Sweet Brown Sugar defeated Paul Jones, Porkchop Cash and King Parsons defeated Masafuchi and Rick Connors, and Roddy Piper and Bob Orton Jr. defeated Ric Flair and Greg Valentine. Also on Monday in Fayetteville, at the Cumberland County Memorial Arena, Mike Rotundo defeated Leroy Brown, Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle defeated the Briscoes, and Jimmy Valiant defeated Joe LaDuke. On Tuesday, December 7th in Raleigh at the Civic Center, Jack Briscoe defeated Paul Jones. Bob Orton Jr. defeated Greg Valentine in a Texas death match. And Sergeant Slaughter and Don Carnoodle defeated Sweet Brown Sugar and Jimmy Valiant. There will not be wrestling again in Raleigh until December 28th. Also on Tuesday in Columbia, South Carolina, at the Township Auditorium, Gene Anderson and Private Nelson defeated Keith Larson and Johnny Weaver. Leroy Brown defeated Mike Rotundo. And NWA World Champion Ric Flair defeated Roddy Piper. And that takes us back around to Wednesday, December 8th, WPCQ Studios, Charlotte, North Carolina. And here's the WWE Network preview for next week's show. December 11th, 1982, NWA World Champion Ric Flair joins forces with United States Champion Greg the Hammer Valentine. As I mentioned earlier on, if you like this show and would like to connect with it more, I invite you to follow us across our many forms of social media, especially on Twitter. Just search at MidAtlanticPod. We would also really appreciate you following us on YouTube, youtube.com/MidAtlanticPod. Full and truncated podcasts plus great audio and video clips from the rich history of Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling and Jim Crockett Promotions. That's youtube.com/MidAtlanticPod. I also invite you to support all of the programs and content here on the Arcadian Vanguard Podcast Network. We don't condescend, and we are dedicated to preserving and accurately archiving the history of professional wrestling. And I'm proud that this show, produced by me, can be a part of that. For Roman Gomez, I'm Mike Sempervivi. Take us home, Uncle Bob, and you too, Bob DeBartolabin.
Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling has been furnished to this station for broadcast at this time by Jim Crockett Promotions in exchange for commercial consideration.
Fans, next week on Mid-Atlantic Championship Wrestling, Bobo Brazil and the Mighty Igor against Charlie Fulton and Tony Russo. Mr. Wrestling will take on Larry Sharp. Paul Jones and Wahoo McDaniel against Kim Duck and Ricky Ferrara. Superstar and the Russian Stomper against Francisco Flores and Steve Kovacs. And Blackjack Mulligan will take on Phil Mercado all next week.